Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas, children! It's me, Mr. Christmas, the overweight uncle who gives children a completely inaccurate sense of their value as people based solely on the price of the gifts they receive. Have you been a thoughtless, spoiled little turd all year, but your father's a hedge fund manager? Brand new PS4 Pro! Have you been a wonderful little angel, but one of your parents is a teacher and the other is an NHS nurse? Off-brand Poundland Super Guy action figure. Some people suggest that this is a flaw in my distribution system, but the fact of the matter is, it's entirely intentional! Like all good artists, I try to make a serious point with my work. Oh, pardon me. The gift to behavior discrepancy exists to teach children that capitalism is a lie. A trap designed to convince the less fortunate that they deserve their suffering. All in the interests of keeping those at the top exactly where they are. This shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. After all, why do you think I wear so much red? And if the year 2019 has taught us anything, it's that my centuries-old scheme to lift the veil from the eyes of the world's workers has not worked at all. But don't let that get you down. Regardless of whether you're getting a new iPhone for Christmas or a Satsuma and a pat on the head, Christmas is still a magical time based on eating too much and then complaining about how full you are with the people you love. Or, at least, the people you can tolerate and whose feelings you don't want to hurt. And isn't that the true meaning of Christmas? Sparing people your true feelings so that everyone can relax a bit for once, for Christ's sake. Literally. And let's not forget the one thing you can always depend on. That I, Mr. Christmas, the radical old elf, will swim up your plumbing, pop my ruddy-cheeked face up through your toilet bowl, and sing excessively loud baritone carols all night long. Don't forget to leave out a half-nibbled chocolate digestive and a whiskey sour balanced on top of your cistern in the traditional fashion. But what can I depend on? What fuels me in my holly jolly mission? Why, it's Tom Crowley, my helpful little gremlin, who makes all the gifts and toys for all the world's little kiddies. But not only that, he also keeps me entertained with his little skits and characters, buoying up my spirits through all the hard work of the festive season, just as he does for you, his loyal listeners. Tom, I'm bored.
Hello, my name's Mavis, the comical baker. I've baked a croissant shaped like a penis.
Oh, ho, 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 ho. Very droll.
Can I please have some water?
You've had your water for today, Mavis. And I've been feeling like a very naughty old Christmas monster this year, keeping all the fun to myself. So I've made Tom produce a bonus festive sketch just for you as a Christmas treat. And all I had to do was threaten to reduce his stuffing ration for the next month. Generous old Tom! The sketch features our old friend Sir Chuntley Buffingham with a special seasonal installment of his radio program, Drama Parlor. What fun! Tom! Play the sketch!
Wait a minute. Sorry, I haven't exported the MP3 file yet.
What?! You said you'd deliver the final broadcast cut on Monday.
I tried, but my fingers weren't working properly. There's no heating up here.
Shut up! You've made me look a fool in front of all the listeners. Why don't you listen? I tell you to do things, and it's in one ear and out the other. Deadlines mean nothing to you. Get that MP3 uploaded at...
Spooky Christmas to you, dear listener. I'm Sir Chuntley Buffingham, and welcome to my drama parlour. As the evenings draw in, and the candlelight paints macabre little plays on the parlour wall, one's mind turns to matters of the sinister. In the tradition of the scary fireside Christmas tale, tonight I bring you a reading from the most chilling seasonal tale ever penned, God Rest Ye Merry Gentle Monsters, by Dame Prurience Gough. Chapter 1. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la Monsters. It was an ordinary December in the village of Little Turdston, which is to say it was pissing down all the time and all the bus routes were fucked. In an otherwise sleepy corner of the village, the Turdston Chapel was alive with lights, voices, and human sweat as the annual Advent caroling service surged forward, never quite hitting the note, but going for it with conviction nonetheless. Keeping himself to himself in a pew at the back of the heaving, roiling godhouse was Clive St. Wrists, approaching late middle age and still unmarried, mostly because he had never once brushed his teeth. His loneliness, coupled with the remembered horrors of the war, made the carol service a bittersweet experience for Clive, and also he resented the vicar for being ugly. Nonetheless, Clive sang on, partly in honour of the brave boys with whom he'd ventured through French fields those many years ago, partly because he could tell his breath was bothering the boy in the pew in front of him, who was Mrs. Leverton's son, and he was a right little shit of a lad. His nose was always dripping on anything that came within 3 feet of him, and once he'd called Clive a pedo in front of the postman. Eventually, the service shuddered to an orgasmic halt, and the God-fearing villagers gathered in the hall to share in each other's company, swap holiday greetings with those they didn't see often enough, and drink a free glass of the most disgusting wine you've ever tasted.
"Seriously, where do you buy wine that tastes that bad?" thought Clive. After all, in the trenches he had drunk wine which old Briggsy made by pissing on some mashed-up grapes through a sock, and even that didn't come close to the glass of putrid frog semen which Clive was grimacing his way through at this very moment.
"Tell me, Mr. St. Wrists, just what was it like in the trenches?" asked the vicar's wife politely.
Clive rolled his eyes with a force that could have flipped a rhinoceros on its ass and replied,
"Oh, it was brilliant. I had the best time. Just a real ball."
"Good,"
the vicar's wife replied, missing Clive's sarcasm completely and turning to snatch one of the hors d'oeuvres, a cracker the size of a postage stamp, slathered with goose liver pate that smelled of off-cock.
It was at that very moment that the chapel's groundskeeper raced into the hall, slamming the great wooden doors shut behind him and barring them with a furious haste.
"Good heavens, Boggs," called out the ugly vicar. "Whatever has possessed you?"
"'Tain't no creature of the spirit what has possessed me," replied Boggs,
who was hit in the head with a spade at the age of 10.
"It's a creature of flesh and bone, as real as you yourself standing there, vicar, and even more ugly."
"What do you mean, even more?" began the vicar before he was cut off by an almighty crash. Something was throwing itself at the firmly barred doors, making a sound like a bag of old cosmetic surgery leftovers being hit with a sledgehammer.
"Monsters," declared Boggs, "with horns and fangs and hundreds of thick limbs like weight-lifting millipedes. At first I weren't sure whether to be frightened or oddly aroused, but then one of them had sex with my golden retriever until it exploded, so I ran away."
This caused understandable concern amongst the carolers. Wait, I'm understating that. They lost their absolute shitting minds. The vicar's wife was vomiting in the font, and everyone else was screaming and stuff. Among this chaos, Clive reflected to himself that as he passed the mysterious standing stone with the pentagram carved into it on the heath that morning, he probably shouldn't have flipped it off and called it a prick. Clive looked at the squealing wimps around him and realized that they were desperately in need of someone to take charge. Gritting his teeth, Clive reached into his coat pocket and took out the old service revolver which he always kept with him in case he ever felt like killing himself, and fired a shot into the rafters.
"Attention!" Clive called out in the sudden, stunned silence. "You gibber and quake if you fancy it, Little Turdston, but I say, if these demons want a fight, I, for one, will jolly well serve it up to them on a plate made of being really rather ticked off."
"But Clive," protested the ugly vicar, "what do we do?"
The blood thumped through Clive's veins like a major metropolitan sewage system. He hadn't felt so alive since he'd accidentally on purpose run over that deer.
"First," he cried, "we throw them Mrs. Leverton's shitty son just in case. Then we unleash Christmas hell."
End of chapter. Will the trembling carolers survive? Will Clive put to rest the mental demons that followed him home from Flanders, as well as the literal demons currently having too much sex with all the village's dogs? Will the vicar splash out on a decent Chianti next year, given that it's only fucking Christmas after all? Tune in next time to find out. Merry Christmas, listeners, and to all a good fright.
Oh, ho, 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 ho. I do hope you enjoyed that Merry Christmas fable, children. If you did, little old Tom and I would consider it the most precious Christmas gift of all if you'd tell a friend or family member about this show while you're cramming another slice of sweaty Christmas ham down your gullet. And while we've all had some fun here today, we truly do wish you a happy and peaceful festive season, whether you find yourself among company or by yourself. The world can be a difficult place sometimes, and if there's one thing we can do for one another, it's show we care by sending love and good wishes in the spirit of the season.
That was beautiful, Your Holiness. Thank you.
Shut up! What did I tell you? Don't interrupt me when I'm trying to offer the listener something sincere. I was trying to do something nice. And what did you do? You had to pipe up and ruin everything. Don't look at me. Don't.